This is essentially 3 minutes for any item that isn't otherwise on the agenda. And if you have complex issues, we request they be put in writing so that we can hear them. And of course, we cannot take action because of Bagley-Keene today, but we do attempt to listen to people. And with that, we have one speaker. And if you haven't turned in your speaker cards, please, this is the time to do it. Dennis Thibault.
I think he's talking with our attorney, so let me just check in with them.
Okay, well, we will take advantage of of that, and we'll call on our board, the state board rep. Yeah, we were waiting breathlessly for your arrival.
Oh, my goodness. Goodness gracious. Well, good morning, all. Sorry. I thought you started these things at 9. Yeah. Just kidding. Hey, everybody. So I'm Steve Moore, board member on the State Water Resource Control Board and liaison to the Great North Coast region. You know, before I get started with my liaison report today, I want to let you know, I want to thank the board for letting us use Samantha Olson's legal services. She served you for a long time, and she's helping us with water rights related matters, and maybe most importantly, she's recently released a CD with her bluegrass band, and it's excellent. I mean, the vocal arrangements are high quality, top notch, and of course, Samantha's fiddle playing is world class. So it's called "Water in the West," and a great little ditty, the title track about water rights. 101. It's quite good.
So maybe we'll invite her back to give us an update on her current work, and she can play a tune for us.
Just make sure she brings her violin.
Yeah. Because obviously you didn't bring a sex to coffee.
No, did you just do that for sale out in the lobby?
Anyway, that concludes my report, and it's great to see you all. Anyway. So, yeah, it's busy times. You know, before I get started, too, I want to extend a warm invitation to all of you for next week. It's going to be here before you know it on Monday and Tuesday next week is the Water Quality Coordinating Committee, when all the regional board members from the 9 regional boards gather, usually in Sacramento, and talk about current events. And this year's theme is really more focused on the roles and opportunities for service that regional board members have, and talking about connecting with our constituency and drawing on our strengths as a very diverse, talented group of governor appointees around the state. I see at last count, I think it's 68 positions on all the regional boards and the 5 of us on the state water board. So we're going to be going over some basics of water quality standards, but then also really focusing on how we can connect with our constituencies in many different forums. It can be at, you know, elected government level, citizen level, community activists, you name it. And you're already doing a lot of this work, and we look forward to hearing your stories and sharing your experiences with the other regional board members next week. I hope you can make it. So that starts, I think, 9 o'clock on Monday, not 8:30. Sorry about that. So, and thanks for your patience and waiting for me this morning. A few things that we've been up to that you may know about. I haven't had the opportunity to report to you since June. In July, we did hold public hearings or a hearing on what was known as the wetlands policy, really the policy that would guide our 401 certification program and waste discharge requirements for discharges of dredge and fill material to waters of the state. And that's what we're referring it to is this discharge of dredge and fill. And we received comments in August, and we're meeting with stakeholders on both sides of the issue. A lot of concern about the language that we proposed, allowing a lot of case-by-case discretion by regional water boards. That's caused great concern on both sides, from an environmental perspective as well as the regulated community. So we're working through those and engaging regional board staff in that. In July, we also I have to say we held public hearings on our first MCL, maximum contaminant level, proposal for a chemical constituent, 1,2,3 trichloropropane, which is a pesticide ingredient. It's more of an issue in areas with heavy agriculture, but it affects drinking water quality. And so we're proposing to set the new MCL at 5 part per trillion, and the public health goal is 0.7 part per trillion, but the 5 represents the detection level. So that's staff's recommendation at this time. And we would expect, if everything goes according to process, having that in effect next summer. So that would be a first for the State Water Board since the Drinking Water Division came over. We are always busy this time of year. In September, we revisit the fees for all of our programs. It went a little less controversially this year. Some aspects of it involve funding the Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program that was always been housed under drinking water. It's called ELAP, and making sure it's properly funded. And we did have the program audited about a year ago. Some pretty tough love in that report about how we need to get up to speed and really, frankly, go from the worst to first in the nation. I mean, we're about the worst coming in as far as our procedures, and a lot of but we're hopeful because we have a lot of engagement from our folks around the state. There's over 700 laboratories that are a part of this program. It's by far the most of any state. And so a lot of them are smaller, and one of the more controversial areas as we get our program up and running is what kind of quality management standards, a system of quality management standards that we set up, because it affects, how many staff are employed in a lab, and that can affect budgets and viability of smaller municipal laboratories around the state. So we're sensitive to that. But we need to insist on a certain level of quality management. So that's an area of pretty heavy controversy, but we're working through those issues. An issue here where the North Coast has shown some leadership is on this idea, important idea, of beneficial uses of water that relate to tribal uses and subsistence fishing. And so we've held updates, or we had a public hearing this last month on the public participation input we've received on draft beneficial uses that would be recommended statewide. Here in this region, there's a cultural use of water beneficial use that was the first of its kind in our state. There are other examples in places like the state of Washington, and so that process continues, and it would be a situation where the state board would recognize definitions, and it would be up to the regional boards to adopt those beneficial uses for specific waters based on specific local input in the future. So let's see. You mentioned WQCC. This last month, we received a detailed technical update from our science advisory panel and our division of drinking water staff on the feasibility of direct potable reuse of municipal wastewater. That is going from the wastewater treatment plant into the drinking water distribution system, into the tap water. We also have received an update on the regulations for surface water augmentation, where we would put what the regulatory system would be for discharging highly treated wastewater into reservoirs for ultimate use as a drinking water source. And we have similar regulations that were adopted in 2014 for groundwater recharge of treated municipal wastewater. And the reservoir regulations, or surface water augmentation as we refer to them as, are on track for adoption in December or January. And there's this region, it's not as much of a demand, but there's a great pressure to consider these one water solutions to water scarcity in a lot of our state, especially in Southern California. But the Bay Area is also looking very seriously at both direct potable reuse and indirect potable reuse by recharge of groundwater and in surface water reservoirs. The bottom line is it's feasible, as I know as a licensed registered engineer. I know it's feasible, and it's an issue of technical, managerial, and financial capacity of local agencies to oversee it to ensure 100% public safety 24/7, 365. And so this is an issue that will, you know, we'll continue to get specific proposals. And our Division of Drinking Water is very conservative by nature, always been very careful about the permitting process and the oversight. One example, but considering innovation as we do in California. And one example of this is the extremely contaminated source water policy that they implement and are implementing and having a ribbon-cutting ceremony in Rialto near Cucamonga in a week and a half on treating perchlorate contaminated groundwater and putting it directly into the drinking water distribution system in the West Valley Water District. It's possible to do, and what you do is you not only treat the contamination, but then you create a cleanup concurrently over time, and you open up groundwater storage potential in our state. There's 10 to 15 times more potential storage in groundwater basins than there are in future dams and surface water, 10 to 15 times more. So this is an attempt to not only clean up some past problems from the defense industry, but provide drinking water in the interim, carefully overseen and regulated, and then ultimately creating more storage capacity that we need for drought resiliency. So those are some of the things going on at the state level. The stormwater policy continues to be something I'm very interested in. I saw some of the North Coast staff and other regional board staff at the annual California Stormwater Conference in San Diego last month, and I gave my overview of history of water development and the importance of drainage in that. It was a very colorful presentation, which I'll give a little bit of at the MS4 item next Tuesday in terms of, you know, the history of water development since the Romans. And then, and the importance of drainage in all of that. It's not just wastewater and water supply, but drainage is a key infrastructure. You know, this region has definitely stepped up to the plate as far as the stormwater resource plans that were required for IRWM, Integrated Regional Water Management funding for stormwater infrastructure. Under SB 985, I think was the number, but we received applications around the state for stormwater planning grants under Prop 1, and we wanted to issue $19 million worth of planning money around the state. We went through, we got about $15 million, so we got less applications in terms of viable proposals than we had money for. And we awarded $9.5 million. So it's $19 million was the goal, $9.5 million in planning grants were awarded. But the list of entities that receive them is quite inspiring. It's very diverse as far as scale and geography throughout the state, including the city of Eureka, the city of Ukiah, the Mendocino County Water Agency for coastal Mendocino for stormwater infrastructure planning, to meet water quality standards, by the way. And the Sonoma County Water Agency had a proposal. I think it's not so much in this region. I bring this up because when this was announced in September, that's $10 million on the table from my perspective. Staff said they might not, you know, they said, well, now we're done. Now we're going to move on to infrastructure. And I looked at this list and thought, this is inspiring but incomplete. And I directed, you know, I encourage staff to do another solicitation, because I think this is a big deal in terms of getting the governance and the infrastructure for drainage up and running in our state, because it hasn't been treated like a utility as it should. And so, but I'm pleased to see folks in this region step up, and I want to see more people in this region step up to take advantage of this planning money to do infrastructure planning that is designed for long-term water quality standards attainment. So there'll be more. As a side note, the drought response program for schools, DROPS, it was an outreach program, and when the drought was going on, and folks would intuitively think, oh, this is to do water efficiency measures in schools. No, drought resiliency outreach was all about infrastructure, drainage, low-impact development, green infrastructure. And so one of the recipients of this initiative of about $440,000 was the Ukiah Unified School District for the Russian River LID demonstration projects at Ukiah High School. This may seem really down in the weeds, but to me, this is really important because this is a whole sector of a great deal of public land ownership in our state, where there's a great opportunity to combine education and infrastructure development and inspire students to think about water infrastructure more holistically and the future management of water in California. The in-stream flow-related work under the California Water Action Plan continues. In July, we entered into a contract with USGS to develop an integrated hydrologic surface water groundwater model for the Russian River watershed, and continue to meet with, you know, our Department of Fish and Wildlife cohorts, folks here, and stakeholders under our Action 4 of the Action Plan to protect and improve ecosystems around the state. So we want to thank your staff for staying involved in that, given that 3 out of the 5 selected rivers are in this region, including Mark West Creek, Shasta River, and South Fork of the Eel. You know, this region also showed leadership by hosting the cyanobacteria harmful algal bloom workshop earlier this year. Turned out to be prescient, because unprecedented numbers of harmful algal blooms were documented this summer. People were wondering, who knows what's going on? Who are the experts? And the people in our surface water ambient monitoring program here in this region, Central Coast, San Francisco Bay regions, and other in Central Valley, were the people who were, and of course state board staff, were the people who have been relied upon in the press as the experts on this issue. We were prepared. You were a big part of that. And it's an important issue because it integrates all the ways humans can adversely affect water quality in terms of pollution and water diversion, but also affects every beneficial use of water by humans and fish and wildlife. So I just want to congratulate you for being on top of that issue. And now, you know, the water boards are looked upon as a leader in the state on the issue. And it has a drinking water aspect too. Fortunately, no drinking water problems have been identified at the tap, but in the source water, it is an issue in terms of microcystins and other potential toxins. Shifting gears quickly, last thing, we always like to talk about legislation, especially this time of year. And there were a total of 24 chaptered bills this year signed by the governor related to water. I will not go over all 24, but it's pretty amazing how much we're being listened to in terms of, from our perspective, being the regulator in water rights, drinking water, and water quality, and the issues of sustainability of water resources in our state. Of note, AB 1755, sponsored by the Bay Area Council of Businesses, by the way, is the Open and Transparent Water Data Act, It really directs the state water boards, regional water boards, Department of Water Resources, Department of Fish and Wildlife to get together and focus on data management to support decision making and to create transparency for the public. It was spurred on a lot by the water efficiency work we were doing with urban water conservation regulations, but it deals with a whole range of issues. I don't know a lot about it, but AB 2029, the timber harvesting plans exemptions, extended from the end of next year to now the end of 2020 as the sunset date of the Forest Fire Prevention Pilot Project exemption from the Forest Practices Act. And so it requires CAL FIRE to submit to the legislature by the end of next year a report on the use and effectiveness of this exemption. An exciting prospect that, you know, we're not sure how it'll pan out, but it seems like something we've been fighting for decades is the Source Watersheds Financing Bill, AB 2480, by Assemblymember Bloom. Now, originally he wanted to include the State Water Project and Federal Water Project watersheds as infrastructure for water supply, and that was the initial proposal. We said, that's a great idea. Make it for all watersheds, not just the state and federal water projects. And he listened to us. And now the bill specifies that the maintenance and repair of source watersheds is eligible for the same forms of financing as other water collection and treatment infrastructure to the extent authorized by federal and state law. In other words, this is the beginning of valuation of watershed as part of the water system. It's part of the treatment. It's clean water infrastructure. It's open space. It's not just pipes, pumps, and treatment plants. This is a big deal, because what this does is it puts on the books the value of these assets that can be leveraged for financing. And it's a breakthrough. So I just look forward to seeing creative minds use this powerful new tool. A couple of Senate bills established groundwater sustainability agencies for SGMA. They're both in the Kings River Basin. But I point this out because it's a very solid way to comply with SGMA in terms of setting up the institutions to implement the law for sustainable groundwater. So for those in the audience, I would urge you to take note if you're, well, the Sonoma County Water Agency, for instance, you've already done a lot at the Sonoma County Water Agency as far as setting up the institutional variety of different ways water is managed. In this case, the various entities in the Kings River Basin, both on the east area and the North Fork area, have now combined to form a new agency under the Special Act District, or as a Special Act District. And that's a lot like what Sonoma County's done. It's what Santa Clara Valley Water District did in 68. It's what Santa Ana Watershed Protection Authority, or Project Authority, did in 1968, which was organized flood control, water quality, water supply, groundwater under one entity. I would be remiss if I did not mention SB 839. It was a number of issues with public resources budget trailer bill, but at long last, the per diem allowances for regional board members has been increased from 100 a day to 250 a day, but also to take into account your preparation for the board meetings. So it's something we've been asking for years. It's probably, originally it was going to be 500, it got whittled down to 250. But hopefully that covers some additional costs.
Doesn't that date back to the, I know we had a discussion when it dates back to the 1970 or the 80s, but you know, every 30 years or so we'll adjust our per diem.
So yeah, it's a far cry from what the work you do, but At least you can still call it a voluntary position, even at that amount, I think. Yeah, you know, it may not be as much an issue here, but another item was SB 1263, which required applicants for new public water system permits to the State Water Board to have a technical report that evaluates the feasibility of supplying safe drinking water to the proposed area from one or more adjacent systems instead of establishing a new public water system. You know, we have 3,000 different entities in our state with public water systems. There's 7,600 independent water systems that are, you know, out there like for a rest area or, you know, this, that, and the other thing all over the state. It's just, it's an incredible number of fragmented governance structures. So, and we get in many parts of our state ongoing proposals for new housing developments that don't have a water system. So they say, well, we'll truck the water in, you know. Having hauled water support a new brand new community, does that make sense to you? Does that sound sustainable? Well, now it's against the law, thanks to this. And that was something we were looking for. It's a bummer to some folks that have land out there, and you know, in terms of the valuation of that land for potential development. But we're finally reckoning with limits in our state. I did give a speech on Sigma, and the name of my speech last month was "The Free for All Is Over." You know, that not only in groundwater, you can't just sink a well and pump without, you know, eventually accounting for it, because it isn't limitless. And by the way, I went to Israel in June, and what I learned there was it's a felony, not only to it's a felony to flood irrigate, and it's a felony to sink a well without permission, and without having it, you know, be metered. So that's a place that reckons with water scarcity and has an existential threat associated with it. But we had a flavor of that last year when our snowpack disappeared. It was a different level of existential threat. But that's why we had our emergency regulations. That's why this year we didn't make them as mandatory. There's a mandatory part to them. But as we look ahead to this rainy season, we will be looking closely at the supply versus demand. And if we get no rain by December, then we may be looking at reinstituting the emergency regulations. So stay tuned on that. There is long-term efficiency work being done under the May executive order. And that has a flavor of trying to establish basic water budgets based on indoor water efficiency and climate and evapotranspiration. And as my closing remark, that's a good system that can set locals up for success, because those agencies that had budget-based water rates during this crisis, where we were able to get 25% reduction of use overall, they weathered it fiscally. They had it set up in a way that if people did cut their use 25%, it didn't have an adverse effect on their budgets. And so what the state can do is provide guidance on expected water budgets based on how many people are in your house, you know, what's your climate, how big is your yard, these kind of things, and establish a framework then that can be used to set up water rates that are more fiscally sustainable. So stay tuned on long-term water efficiency standards as well. And with that, thanks for the time to give you a little flavor of what's going on in Sacramento, and hopefully see you next week at the WQCC.
Board Member Gustey.
Thank you, Chairman. Steve, thanks, as always, a thorough and exhaustive report.
I'm sorry to exhaust you.
No, I didn't. That's your word, not mine. A couple of things. I wanted to connect a couple of dots on things that you said. So the Board of Forestry extension of the exemption, I want you to remember that that only applies to private and state lands, mm-hmm. not federal lands. And so if we look at the and it's directly tied to the impacts of the drought, water stress on mostly pines and Douglas fir, mostly pines. So for our region, west of 101, maybe not as big of a deal as east of 101, but certainly within our region on private and state lands, I think it's a good thing. The nexus to, and I agree with you, the nexus to the watershed inclusion as part of the infrastructure, I agree with you. I think that's a wonderful step forward in recognizing that the sponge that that initially collects our water and delivers it to the brick-and-mortar infrastructure are our forests and lands. But again, most of the source watersheds, Trinity County, Del Norte County, are federally owned. And there are challenges dealing with the agency that manages those lands. And so, again, even though I think it's a good step forward, hopefully it could be used as leverage to get the largest landowner of source waters, to maybe be a little bit more diligent in how they manage their landscapes. So I can't speak for this board, but I can speak for myself. If I can lend a hand in moving that discussion forward, please don't hesitate to ask.
Yeah, great. Very good points. There was some experience in the Santa Ana watershed where 80% of their local water supply, you know, they're talking Orange County, Riverside, San Bernardino, and those big mountains that surround them, 80% comes from what are a lot of federal forest lands. And so they're trying to hammer out an approach where, you know, ratepayer funds can be used to invest in federal lands and proper sustainable forest management that benefits water supply and forestry.
And it's good. I mean, if you look at our region, if you start in Upper Lake, you know, from Upper Lake to the Oregon border, we've got the Mendocino National Forest, the Six Rivers, the Klamath, and you can drive from middle of Mendocino County, middle of Lake County, to the Oregon border and stay on federal land if you know the route. I mean, they have huge chunks of land in our region, and they are the source for much of our water. And the drought is ravaging a lot of those trees, and in many cases, there are good work coming out showing that, you know, there are so many trees across the landscape that it's inhibiting the amount of water that can get through the system to surface water and the like. So there's a lot of work to be done in the next several decades.
Yes, no, it's great. You're very articulate of the issue. That it's an inspiring frontier, I think, in terms of potential collaboration that solves many challenges.
Kelly, do you have any comments?
I wanted to reaffirm, I was very happy that the ratepayer funds might be transferred because as a regional board, we can't get staff for regulating 41% of our regional board district because it's on the federal side and they do it on a fee-based system. Now, the other alternative is raising fees, but that obviously has a challenging aspect to between the federal government and the state. And also, our current collaborative relationship may have delivered more to everybody than we might get out of litigation over that issue. So I understand it's a very sensitive issue, but where our challenge is, we have to take staff that are for state-mandated funded programs, shift it to something we don't get reimbursed or can't get a staff position. So I'm really glad you're looking at that issue. I also, could you check in with what you're allowed to say and for on the MS program in the state of California Supreme Court, and for the board's background, there was an adverse decision that it's would be considered a state mandate, and therefore you'd have to pay for county compliance, and the state board has petitioned for rehearing. And that does constrain a little bit on the state answering exactly what they're prepared to do if they lose that rehearing. But I thought it's such a big issue, even here, that it'd be important to touch on a tiny amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's complicated. We're formulating our response. Currently, permits that have been enacted are enforceable. And so, you know, our general advice is just continue to implement the program. And we think that this affects, you know, future or things that are on for instance, one region was going to adopt their MS4 permit. Now that's been put in on hold pending resolutions of some of these issues. But yeah, you know, the MS4 permit is a tool that we've been trying to use to advance wise long-term thinking on infrastructure for drainage. And depending on the outcome of the Supreme Court decision process, you know, that tool may be changed. But for now, the permits are in place and enforceable.
And then lastly, I love your phrase, inspiring but incomplete. So I think that's a great approach. Board Member Nair.
There's a frontier.
Steve, John brought up the other effort, which is fees. And so from the standpoint of, you know, you state boards set fees. And we have actually used fees as a, and actually the abeyance of fees, especially on waivers. And I know that that door kind of swings both ways, and that for us, we've used fees as a way to basically encourage then people to move into waivers, because it's been a process where we can actually have progress towards regulatory compliance. TMDL is a perfect example. Use a waiver. We use that, say, like in the dairy program, effectively. But fees also fund staff, which we're very aware of. And it looks like that's changing. So I would ask just some, as we go towards more of a fee-based system, especially as it pertains to us, because we've used that effectively, how do we transition then to the regulated community, which is going to be fee-based? All of a sudden, there's a cost now to that's based on either acreage or output or activity. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting transition. I'm a little bit concerned about the fact of doing so, you know, using like the CAL FIRE parcel tax reaction that was out there in the wide, wide world, a little bit concerned about what that's going to do for us. Mm-hmm. And looking, just putting that out there to you as a state board, you guys set fees and that is your job. And we're out on the front line again, trying to work with regulated communities and use that as a tool to go forward with regulatory and try to make progress in sometimes very tough communities, by the way. Sometimes it's been used as a very effective tool, I believe, to have people enter into programs. And again, I realize it swings both ways. These programs are funded, and personnel and staff and all that program is funded, and it needs to be funded. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to put it out to you, because I know that you are somebody that, as our direct connection back and conduit to the state board process, fees are something that, again, looking at how we kind of transition in some of these programs toward fee-based and how we, you know, show the value in the program and remain engaged and not have an adverse reaction to that.
Yes, I hear you. It depends on the group of stakeholders, but sometimes on a smaller operation, the fee can be significant.
Yes.
Relative to their overall fiscal picture, and in other areas, it's not as large of a signal.
Yes.
So it's something we're interested in, and I think in the last 2 years, under John Russell, the Division of Administrative Services chief, he's had an unprecedented stakeholder process to try to gather input on the fees, to explain and create transparency of where the fees go. And he's been trying to engage program staff from all the regional boards, you know, to a certain level, to inform those, you know, those discussions. This year's wasn't as controversial, I think, thanks to that effort. But yes, an example is the cannabis cultivation program has a lot of general fund right now supporting staff here, Central Valley, and as we get that program up and running, the expectation of the legislature and the Department of Finance is to migrate that program to a fee-based program. And so getting the right touch on that will be critical to keep, as you say, stakeholders engaged. So that's something we're thinking about.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I believe part of it, too, is that, you know, I look at regulatory as pretty cut and dried, right? It's a speed limit at times. But in Port of Cologne or otherwise, it's not necessarily set up to reward. And it is sometimes a line and a bright line at times. And I do believe that fees, the way that we have used fees, the concept that I would consider introducing here is that almost an abeyance of fees or an abeyance of fees based on a compliance right? Because if we have compliance out there, we have participation within these programs that lessens our regulatory burden, then we could lessen the fee perhaps as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a way that within the fine script of Port of Cologne, that's not necessarily explicit there, but I believe it could be a consideration and a doctrine that is in essence setting up then a system to recognize people that, and efforts out there that really do go forward and do that good work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a very interesting concept in the wide world and the application of regulatory to me.
Yes, so I appreciate the point, and I'm interested in it. I think, you know, there you'll find also that there's sort of, like with a water agency, there's fixed costs.
You bet.
And that we have to somehow, and the expectation is for us to cover those fixed costs.
You bet.
So there'll be a balancing.
You bet.
We do that with ecological restoration. I'll just note there are examples in the fee structure. With 401, for instance, we have a significantly lower fee for 401 permits for ecological restoration.
Yeah, in fact, actually, I got to tell you, I actually pulled one of those permits, a 401, and it was $250.
Right.
For a general 401 that paired with a 1652 on the Fish and Wildlife, and it was a beautiful thing.
It's a yes.
Thanks, Steve.
So we do consider the fee.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to be creative and trying to get around the corner. Thank you.
No, that's good.
Board Member Hill.
Board Member Minton.
Thank you. Good to see you, Steve. Thanks for the report. One item that you didn't touch on in too much detail, the Russian River emergency orders. I understand that the information order was readopted to kind of get the stragglers through the door in terms of submitting information, and I'm wondering how that went this year and where you are with compliance.
Good. I appreciate the question. And yes, we did re-up the authority in August, I think. And the latest I've heard is there will be a letter going out to approximately 2,000 landowners that either have submitted no information or I think in most cases incomplete information. And I reviewed an early draft of that letter and made some suggestions in terms of turnaround time and some articulation of our intent to use the information and to feed back to the stakeholders. You know, what it means to do some interpretation and analysis and to have public meetings to discuss it. So we're working through that. But like I said, the scale is pretty large, and yet I think it's about, 20% of the landowners roughly. So it's 2,000 and they're going out and it's a closing of the loop, as you say, to get the information all up on the same level. And then we're committed to feeding that back to the stakeholders in terms of what it means and, you know, the complexity of groundwater surface water interaction in those four watersheds.
Thank you.
Yep. That should go out next month.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your report.
Thank you. Thanks for waiting up for me. Sorry about being late today. Thank you.
We were breathless.
Water in the west.
Yeah. The next